Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Giri Vorathadi. Gopijana Vallabha Giri Vorathadi. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivarudhari Jaya Gopijana Vallabha Girivarudhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayom Vishnupata Ramahansa Parivraja Kacharya Ashto Tarastu Shri Shimadesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Gaura Premanande Hari Hari Bo Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All glories to the assembled devotee All glories to the assembled devotee All glories to the assembled devotee All glories to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 10, Deliverance of the Yamala Arjuna Trees, texts number 20 and 22. We'll chant only text 20. Word meanings, yet because, imao, these two young demigods, Lokapalasya, of the great demigod Kuvera, Putrao, born as sons, Bhutva, being so, they should not have become like that. Tama Plutao, so absorbed in the mode of darkness. Na not Vivasasam, without any dress, completely naked. Atmanam, their personal bodies, Vijanita, could understand that they were naked. Sudurmadao, because they were very much fallen due to false pride.
Yadima Lokapalasya Putra Bhutva Tama Pluta Navivasasam Atmanam Vijanita Sudurmada Yarima Lokapalasya Putra Bhutva Tama Pluta Navivasasam Atmanam Vijanita Sudurmada Yarima Lokapalasya Putra Bhutva Tamanudpluta Navivasasam Atmanam Vijanita Sudurmada
Putra Putta Tama Vijanita Sudurmada Vijanita Sudurmada.
Ladies.
Yadima Lokapalasya.
Yadima Lokapalasya.
Putra
Bhutva Tamaputa.
Navivasa Samatmanam.
Vijanita Sudurmada. Kapalasya
Janita
Sudurmada.
Translation. These two young men, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, are by fortune the sons of the great demigod Kuvera, but because of false prestige and madness after drinking liquor, they are so fallen they are naked but cannot understand that they are. Therefore, because they are living like trees, for trees are naked but are not conscious, these two young men should receive the bodies of trees. This will be proper punishment. Nonetheless, after they become trees and until they are released, by my mercy they will have remembrance of their past sinful activities. Moreover, by my special favor, after the expiry of 100 years by the measurement of the demigods, they will be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vasudev, face to face, and thus revive their real position as devotees. Srila Prabhupada's purport. A tree has no consciousness. When cut, it feels no pain. But Narada Muni wanted the consciousness of Nalakuvara and Manigriva to continue so that even after being released from the life of trees, they would not forget the circumstances under which they had been punished. Therefore, to bestow upon them special favor, Narada Muni arranged things in such a way that after being released, they would be able to see Krishna in Vrindavan and thus revive their dormant bhakti. Each day of the demigods in the upper planetary system equals 6 months of our measurement. Although the demigods in the upper planetary system are attached to material enjoyment, they are all devotees, and therefore they are called demigods. There are two kinds of persons, namely the devas and the asuras. Asuras forget their relationship with Krishna, asuram bhavam ashritaha, whereas the devas do not forget. Dvabhuta sarga lokesmin deva asura evacha vishnu bhakta smrito deva asuras tad viparyaya. Padma Purana. The distinction between a pure devotee and a karma mishra devotee is this. A pure devotee does not desire anything for material enjoyment, whereas a mixed devotee becomes a devotee to become a first-class enjoyer in this material world. One who is in direct touch with the Supreme Personality of Godhead in devotional service remains pure, uncontaminated by material desires. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma dhyanavritam. By karma mishra bhakti, one is elevated to the celestial kingdom. By jnana mishra bhakti, one is able to merge in the Brahman effulgence. And by yoga mishra bhakti, one is able to realize the omnipotency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But pure bhakti does not depend on karma, jnana, or yoga, for it simply consists of loving affairs. The liberation of the bhakta, therefore, which is called not just mukti but vimukti, surpasses the five other kinds of liberation, saryujya, sarupya, salokya, sarshti, and samipya. A pure devotee always engages in pure service, anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. Taking birth in the upper planetary system as a demigod is a chance to become a further purified devotee and go back home, back to Godhead. Narada Muni indirectly gave Manigriva and Nalakuvara the greatest opportunity by his so-called curse. Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Mena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. The last line of these three verses reads, Labdha Bhakti Bhavishyataha. Labdha Bhakti means having revived their natural condition of devotional service. So this is Narada's blessing to these two, Nalakuvara and Manigriva, who are now committing sinful activities. Prabhupada phrases what they will remember. They're going to have their remembrance, they're going to have the consciousness Usually they're going to be in the body of trees, and trees are usually not conscious, as Prabhupada says here. Or maybe there's a very, very low level of consciousness, but certainly not consciousness of their past lives. So Prabhupada doesn't say that Navakuvera and Manigriva will be conscious of their past lives. He says they will be conscious of their past sinful activities. So especially at this point, they're committing the sinful activity of appearing naked, not being conscious of what they're doing, not moving. They're not moving in the sense that they didn't offer their obeisances to Narada Muni. They didn't move to hurry up and put on their clothes. So like trees, they're just standing there, doing nothing, not doing what they're supposed to do, and not even conscious, really, of their situation, being naked in front of a great devotee and great saint. So this is what they're going to remember as trees, this episode at least. They'll know why they're there. This is Narada's blessing. And then Narada is going to bless them that labdha bhakti. They will awaken, revive their dormant bhakti. So in this purport, Srila Prabhupada gets into a discussion of karma mishra bhakti, jnana mishra bhakti, and yoga mishra bhakti. This is quite a rare discussion, actually, in Srila Prabhupada's books. It really doesn't come up very often. There's a few conversations where he talks about it. Of course, it's implied in different ways, in different places, but he doesn't usually use these terms so much. So we don't have a lot of information about it, but here Prabhupada gives some understanding about it. First of all, when I look at Srila Prabhupada's purports, I like to try to figure out what is Prabhupada's stream of thought. How is he making his argument? How is he progressing from point to point? So he, after he describes that there are two kinds of living entities, first he says that the demigods are devotees. So he makes that point. And then he says, so of course that means Nala Kuvara and Manigriva, they're in that category, they're devotees. Then he quotes this verse, there are two kinds of living entities in this universe. We have two broad categories, the asuras and the devas. So the devas are the demigods of the devotees. They are Vishnu Bhakta, Smrito Daiva. Those who are Vishnu Bhakta, they're the Daiva, demigods, devotees. They're devotees of Lord Vishnu or Krishna. And the asuras are Viparya, which means just the opposite. They're the enemies of Vishnu, or they have no interest in Vishnu. So we have these two broad categories. So after making this point, Srila Prabhupada immediately begins a discussion of karma mishra devotees. So it seems to me that this Prabhupada implying here that this is the category of the demigods. Generally speaking, the demigods, they're interested in an opulent life. They're interested in enjoying. So they're not pure devotees. We'll see that this Nala Kuvara and Manigriva, in fact, it's something we may be a little curious and may wonder, well, why? They had Krishna's darshan. Why didn't they just go back to Godhead? But Prabhupada uses the phrase a few places. He says they attained their original position as demigods. So it's not really their original position. It's their former position. Their original position, of course, is as devotees of Krishna in the spiritual world. That's the original position for all of us. So they return to their position as demigods, but labdha bhakti. Their bhakti was revived. So it seems to be implied here that their bhakti was not pure 100% prema bhakti. And that because Prabhupada begins this discussion talking about karma mishra devotees, it seems that this is the level of devotion that they were returning to. This is also suggested by the end of the purport here. It says that Narada Muni indirectly gave Manigriva Nala Kuvara the greatest opportunity by his so-called curse. So he's giving them an opportunity. Of course, he's giving them various opportunities. One opportunity is to have the darshan of Krishna. But with that opportunity, they will also get the opportunity to return to their former position and continue their advancement in devotional service. That's actually the previous sentence says, taking birth in the upper planetary system as a demigod is a chance to become a further purified devotee and go back home, back to Godhead. So as far as I can understand here, this all suggests that Nalakuvar and Manigriva, even though it says Labdha Bhakti, they awakened their bhakti, it wasn't 100% pure bhakti. Their karma mishra bhakti is the situation that they're in. And Prabhupada, then he describes the, says, by karma mishra bhakti, one can be elevated to the heavenly planets. So we worship Krishna, but we have material desires. We want opulence. We want to live a long time. We want to be beautiful. We want happiness, even. Even that desire for happiness is a kind of a contamination. If we want to, if that's a goal in itself, you can say. Of course, the desire for happiness is innate within us. We have a natural desire for happiness. But if it becomes our purpose in the practice of bhakti, then that's not right. That's not exactly pure. Because, as Prabhupada, he quotes this verse from, or part of it at least, anyabhilashita shunyam jnana karmadhyanavritam anukulena kulyena krishnanu shinanam bhaktirutama. Actually, he quotes the whole verse, but in two separate parts. So this verse is from the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu, right towards the beginning. I think it's verse 11 of the first, 1.1.11, I think the verse is, if I remember correctly. Anyabhilashita shunyam. So right from the beginning, Rupa Goswami defines what devotional service really is, what bhakti is. Bhaktir uttama. Uttama means the highest. Literally it means above tama. Everything below has some influence, a slight influence of darkness, you can say. But uttama bhakti is anya abhilashita shunyam. Anya means other. Abhilashita means desires. And shunyam means zero. No more material desires. Anya abhilashita shunyam. Abhilash. Desire. We have desire. It's not that the abhilash is shunya. It's not that the desire is zero. But anya abhilash is zero. No other desire. In the Tulsi prayer, we express one desire. Mora e abhilash. Again, abhilash, abhilashita. Mora e abhilash. Vilas kunje diovas. You may notice that Prabhupada, sometimes he'll say, our this Krishna consciousness movement. Not just our Krishna consciousness movement. So that's in Bengali, just you'll see in this. Mora e abhilash, it says, my this desire. Mora e abhilash. What is my desire? We're praying to Tulsi Maharani. Vilas kunje dio vas. Give me vas, give me residence in Vilas kunje, the pleasure groves of Vrindavan. Why? Then I'll always be able to see the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. That's the devotee's desire. To always see, and of course seeing means taking part in, serving Radha Krishna while they enjoy their pastimes. So we have abhilash, but not anya abhilash, other desires than devotional service. So what are some of these other desires? These are, again, we have these broad categories, karma, jnana, and yoga. Each one of these activities, basically, these are the only activities you can perform in life. Either you're doing karma, you're doing jnana, you're doing yoga, or bhakti. That's it. That's the sum total of human activity. Fits into one of these categories. So if your karma is, bhakti is tinged with karma, desire for fruitive results, for your own selfish desire to attain something, They're like, when we first come to Krishna consciousness, we may have these. In fact, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, four kinds of persons come to me. So they have some desire to be fulfilled when we first come to Krishna. So Krishna says that we're great souls because they come to him, but eventually those desires must be given up. Now another way to look at this is that, of course, karma mishra, the word mishra means mixed in or mixed with. So karma mishra bhakti. If your karma is not mixed with some bhakti, then you're not going to get the result either. Krishna will fulfill your desire if there's some little bit of devotion, just like the demigods, especially they want to go to the heavenly planets. So there has to be some devotion there, some. Well, as Prabhupada said, Vishnu Bhaktir Smrito Daiva. The devas are devotees of Lord Vishnu. So even though they're karma kandiya, they may be, they on that path, they perform yajnas to Lord Vishnu and so on. So because the bhakti is mixed in, then the karma becomes successful. It's similar with the other ones. Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Jnana Mishra Bhakti means that it means the bhakti mixed with karma, or jnana mixed with bhakti. So if our bhakti is mixed with karma, jnana, that's not good. Ultimately, of course, we see this, of course, in the pastimes of the residents of Vrindavan. When Yashoda got some jnana and she started to think philosophically about, well, who's Krishna? Maybe he's not really my son, and so on. Then it was sort of, it interfered with her pure bhakti. So jnana, and also as Prabhupada points out here, bhakti, it is successful on its own strength. It doesn't need help. It doesn't need the support of these other things. They need the support of bhakti to be successful. But bhakti doesn't need the support of jnana. Now in the initial stages, there's some jnana. In fact, the definition of diksha is that the spiritual master gives jnana, he gives divya jnana, so it gives that transcendental knowledge. But if there's, the way Prabhupada explains this, he quotes the verse, bahunam janmanam ante jnanavam mam prapadyate. The jnani eventually realizes Krishna. But from that point, then there's no need for continued philosophical speculation. The jnani is engaged in philosophical speculation, so that must be given up. For pure bhakti, no more guessing. You're in contact with Krishna, no need to guess anymore. And on the other side, the jnana is successful with bhakti mixed in there. And we can see this because what is the jnani trying to do? The jnani is trying to attain Brahman. He's attracted to Brahman, Brahma Jyoti, or Brahman realization. So what is that? What attraction? Attraction is just another word for love. There's some love there. I want to attain this. I have such love for this that I'll live naked in the Himalayas in the freezing cold and take a cold bath in the snow and eat practically nothing. Because that Brahman is so desirable to me that I'll do anything practically to attain it. So that's a kind of bhakti. And of course, what is Brahman? Brahman is an aspect of Krishna. That's Krishna. That attraction is to Krishna. It may not be fully conscious attraction, but it's, in fact, it's an attraction to Krishna, at least an aspect of Krishna, a transcendental aspect of Krishna. And the same thing with Yoga Mishra Bhakti. So yoga, of course, we see even in the Srimad Bhagavatam that there are devotees who practice yoga, devotees, like Dhruva Maharaj, for example, he practiced yoga. In Kapila Dev's instructions, there are recommendations for practicing yoga with bhakti. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite male apasya purusham purnam mayam chatara pashayam. This is Vyasadeva. He's telling his story to Nar. He's telling his story. Right? Yes. No, I'm sorry. It's not Narada tells his story, then Vyasadeva. Then we hear about Vyasadeva. After he met with Narada Muni, he performed his own meditation. But that meditation, bhakti yogena manasi, It was he concentrated his mind in bhakti yoga. He was sitting and meditating in his ashram, but it was bhakti meditation. So there's a yoga that is infused with bhakti. We know even, of course, like some associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they would enter into meditation, a kind of samadhi, and meditate on the pastimes of Krishna. But then there's yoga, which is, of course, not so advanced. What is the yogi trying to do? He's trying to realize Paramatma. Those who are properly guided, at least, they are trying to realize Krishna within the heart, Paramatma. So their intention is also kind of devotion, bhakti. They're trying to connect through yoga. They're trying to connect with Krishna, the Paramatma feature of Krishna. And they won't be successful in their meditation unless that bhakti is there. But that kind of meditation where you have to follow certain rules and breathe in a certain way and maybe be distracted by desires for mystic siddhis, that has to be given up. That's not part of pure devotional service. So these considerations show how what it means, unalloyed bhakti. Prabhupada used this term, unalloyed, nothing mixed in. Alloyed in bhakti means something mixed into it. Whereas we're searching for pure devotional service. So again, the Nalakuvar and Manigriva, there's something mixed in there. Even though they're bhakti, this brings to mind the idea that sometimes these words are not always used in the same way. Bhakti in one place, in one context, may mean something slightly different than bhakti in another place. Just like when Prabhupada called us pure devotees, all of my disciples are pure devotees. Well, we're pure devotees and Narada Muni is a pure devotee, but not quite the same thing. I wrote one of my editorials about this. It was called Purely Devotees. And my suggestion was that what Prabhupada meant there was we're on the path of pure devotee. We're not interested in mixing in yoga. We know philosophically, we're trained by Srila Prabhupada to know that all we need is bhakti. Krishna bhakti hoyali sarva karma krita hoy. In Chaitanya Charitamrita it says, Shraddha shabde vishvas kahe sudrida nishjoy. That Shraddha, faith, means to have this firm conviction. Krishna bhakti hoyale sarva karma krita hoy. That if you do Krishna bhakti, everything else will be taken care of. You don't have to do whatever you can attain from jnana or from karma or from yoga. That you'll get automatically. Sarva karma krit. Everything else will be done. You don't have to do it separately. It's just done automatically. It's taken care of. Mukti swayam mukulitanjali sevate sman. We have this nice image given by what's his name? Krishna Karna. Bilva Mangal Thakur. Bhaktis Twayi Stiratara Bhagavan Yadisha Daivena Natpalati Divya Kishura Murti Mukti Swayam Mukulitanjali Sevate Sman Dharmartha Kama Gataya Samaya Pratiksha. So he says, now that I've awakened my devotion to Krishna, now that I have bhakti, so bhakti devi, then mukti swayam mukulitanjali, say the mukti is standing before me with folded hands saying, how can I serve you? So I don't have to, because I have bhakti. It says that these others, like mukti devi, she's a maidservant of bhakti devi. So when you have bhakti, just like we hear in Vedic times, you marry a princess, so then you get 1,000 maidservants along with the princess. So you marry Bhakti Devi, then you get all the other maidservants of Bhakti. So Mukti, and then Dharmartha Kama Gataya Samaya Pratiksha. Anything else that you can attain, Dharma Artha, especially as mentioned in this verse, Dharma Artha Kama Moksha, these also follow. So the results of Jnana, Yoga, Karma, these come automatically. So this is Shraddha, to accept this. So when Prabhupada said pure devotees, it means we know this. We know that all we need is bhakti. We don't need anything else. So pure devotees in that sense, we're trained in that way. And even, so as I'm saying, the word bhakti, even though it said that they awakened their bhakti, so it's a different kind of bhakti. Even the word prema, for us, we use it exclusively. We say prema. Well, prema only means one thing. It means highest spiritual love. But you'll find in the Bhagavatam that sometimes it's used in other ways. Or at least premna, which is just a form of prema, with prema. One place it occurs, I forget, I think it's between Swayambhuva Manu and his son. There's some family relationship, ordinary family relationship, where the word prema is used. So sometimes the words are used differently in different contexts. So it seems here that even though the Nalakuvera and Manigriva are awakening their bhakti, that bhakti is not anyabilashita shunyam. It still has some desires, so they're being given the opportunity by Narada Muni to continue in their original position as demigods, make further advancement, and then come to the highest stage. Because the highest stage is so high, it's so elevated. The residents of Vrindavan, their love is so pure, it's practically unimaginable to us. So they still have time to progress toward that very elevated stage of Uttama Bhakti. So I'll read this long translation to these three verses. These two young men, Nalakuvera and Manigriva, are by fortune the sons of the great demigod Kuvera. But because of false prestige and madness after drinking liquor, they are so fallen that they are naked but cannot understand that they are. Therefore, because they are living like trees, for trees are naked but are not conscious, these two young men should receive the bodies of trees. This will be proper punishment. Nonetheless, after they become trees and until they are released, by my mercy they will have remembrance of their past sinful activities. Moreover, by my special favor, after the expiry of 100 years by the measurement of the demigods, they will be able to see the Supreme Personality of Godhead Vasudeva face to face and thus revive their real position as devotees.
Hare Krishna. Thank you for the nice class, Prabhu. I was a little taken aback in the purport when Prabhupada says, he says, a tree has no consciousness. When cut, it feels no pain. That I've read either in somewhere in about this one Indian scientist who did the mm-hmm. experiments with the... But what's interesting was, because I have this little technological thing here, in the very next purport, Srila Prabhupada says...
This means that even though they are trees, they are disturbed when skinned for medical science.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like he's... Prabhupada's saying one thing, then he's saying another. I mean, is it just that the level of quote-unquote pain is... I mean, it's there, but it's not...
I think we have to say that's the idea. Yeah. Basically, they have no pain. And compared to what we experience, we might say, they have no pain. But it's a very, very low level of awareness. In fact, their awareness of anything is very low. So it seems to be that's what Prabhupada is saying.
Okay, thank you. Thank you.
One time when Srila Prabhupada was asked about, his devotees, and I just thought I'll mention from a different angle, Srila Prabhupada said, yes, dear, my disciples are all pure devotees because they're engaged in pure devotional service. And so I was just thinking, like you mentioned, of comparing ourselves with Narad Muni. It's like a child understand 1 + 1 = 2. That statement is true for the university scholar, 1 + 1 = 2, but he can explain it much more, or he understand it much deeper. Mm-hmm. And I have a question, Prabhu. You were describing how the demigods are, they're all devotees, engaging in devotional service. So I was just wondering that why, like when it's described that sometimes they would eager to come to the material world when they see the Sankirtan movement or, they want to come here because they felt here is a better opportunity. So I'm just wondering why being here, being a miserable place.
Yeah, there's a shloka like that in one of the later cantos. And, well, the reason is because things can happen quicker here. And there aren't the kinds of distractions that you have in the heavenly planets. Of course, there are other kinds of distractions, but happiness is a big distraction. If you're really happy, it's hard to get motivated, you might say. The material miseries are a kind of motivation to get serious about spiritual life. And then, of course, because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, especially people want to come, the demigods want to come during Kali Yuga because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. No incarnation before Anarpita Chirin Chirat Karunaya Vatirna Kalo. Chirin, after a very, very long time, Krishna has come to give freely Ujvala Rasa, Madhurya Rasa. So this is an exceptional time to be here. Kali Yuga, even though it's such a bad time in some ways, it has this great blessing that we're still within the historical period of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that's why it's attractive to those who are intelligent. Kalim sabhajyantyarya. There's one verse after the Krishnavaram Tushakrishnam around then. It says those who are very intelligent, then they will worship this Kali Yuga because everything, you can get everything in Kali Yuga because of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the Sankirtan movement. So it has special, there's special mercy available that's not normally available anywhere or at any other time. Yes, Rangabati.
Nice class. Just a comment about the tree. I was thinking that other living entities, conscious-wise, if you would cut parts of their body, they don't grow back. But a tree, you trim the branches, and because of the consciousness and the life in the tree, it sometimes flourishes even more. It's interesting. My question was, you said that diksha was gyan, when the spiritual master gives gyan. So what about all the millions of people that are getting Prabhupada's books? They are getting knowledge, but they don't have diksha. How does that work?
Well, there are different kinds of even initiation, you might say. Of course, this gets into controversial areas and controversial issues. But in one sense, because we see examples of it in our scriptures, where somebody is considered to be initiated just when they, you know, they hear the Maha Mantra from somebody, for example. So they hear the Maha Mantra, so that's a kind of initiation. So in one sense, we're initiating people just by going out on Harinam and putting the Maha Mantra within their ears. Of course, where are we getting it? We're getting it from Srila Prabhupada. Ultimately, it's coming from Krishna. Golokera Premadan Harinam Sankirtan. It's coming from the spiritual world, ultimately. So there's diksha and there's diksha. There's for us now, of course, we are, Srila Prabhupada is our acharya. We consider him the acharya for the whole world, world acharya. He set the standard. So even though there may be different philosophical ways of looking at these things, we do things the way he told us to do it, instructed us to do it. So even though one may be getting diksha in a kind of way by definition, by hearing transcendental sound through Srila Prabhupada's books or in some other way, still Prabhupada set up a system by which this is established. Because in some ways you think, well, it's kind of curious, because at initiation it says, you know, like you're saying, so that I never had any Divya Gyan until that fire sacrifice took place. It doesn't seem to be right. But in any case, that's the way Rupa Goswami defines the word diksha. The giving of di there means divya gyan. So when that is given by the spiritual master, then that's called diksha. So in another sense, diksha doesn't mean the actual ceremony. It means the transformation. But the ceremony, of course, is all part of the system that's set up by the previous acharyas, by Srila Prabhupada. And we can't just neglect those things. say, oh, well, I just have to chant Hare Krishna. Because philosophically, we could think, wow, the holy name, it doesn't depend on any external situation, any external, like a fire. What does a fire sacrifice have to do with transcendentals? Krishna is present in his holy name. That's all we have to know. Krishna is present in his holy name. So I just chant Hare Krishna. Why do I need a guru? So we can rationalize in ways like that. I'm getting Divya Gan just by chanting Hare Krishna. But there are rules. There is a system set up. And it's Krishna's system. It's coming through the parampara. So we have to adhere to that. And our teacher, who's telling us what the system is, telling us how to apply it and so on. And we have faith that he's the pure representative of Krishna. So we do it his way. And we also, of course, part of our philosophy, and the philosophy given by Krishna is, you have to please the pure devotee, you have to please the guru, you have to humble yourself. But that's another whole aspect of it. Unless there's humility, that's the reason for accepting the spiritual master, to humble oneself, to accept that I'm the servant, dasavat, Narada Muni says, the brahmachari in the gurukul is dasavat, just thinks himself, I'm just a servant. So all of these things are part, you can say, they're all part of diksha. They're all part of getting that transcendental knowledge. You have to accept the whole thing, not half-hen logic, as Prabhupada would point out. Just accept part of it. You have to accept the whole thing as given by the acharyas to be successful. Madan Mohan Prabhu?
I was thinking in the same point that you mentioned, that Yasha Prashada, Bhagavat Prashada says, unless the spiritual master is pleased, there isn't any advancement. And when you do hear, it starts off with Adoshwada Sadasanga. So in the Sadasanga, you hear more that you need a spiritual master. Then by your Bhajana Kriya is there where you become free from the anartas. So I've noticed for the most part, these ones, so many people that do chant Hare Krishna, in one sense they're liberated, but the possibility of obtaining prema, to get rid of, it was brought up to Prabhupada at different times, and he says, well, what is the question of the 10 offenses? Where does that fit in? So we find that without following strictly and pleasing the spiritual master, the anartas, and then there's that verse we chant on Saturday morning, Bahu Janma.
Bahu Janma Kori Yadi Shravana Kirtana.
Yeah, so one can go on chanting for many lifetimes, but he won't get prema, because which is the ultimate goal of his chanting. So the essential point is always there for, if you do take the shiksha of Prabhupada, he does emphatically say it, and there's many verses that say one must. You know, so it is there.
Yeah. Dharmaraj, again.
It's basically the same thing what Madam Mohan Prabhu has just explained. In 1972, Srila Prabhupada gave a lecture in Los Angeles, and he was talking about the 10 offenses and the fate in chanting the holy names. So Srila Prabhupada describes that one may be introduced to the holy names in so many different ways, but then there's a testing period before he actually give initiation, maybe 6 months to a year, he explains like that. So that when one actually develops faith, then one actually takes diksha. So that, like offense number 7, it actually gives us the chance, like we go out and give the holy name to everyone, then it gives them a chance to develop faith. And when they develop faith, then they actually get initiated. So it's just a process or a different understanding of a higher level.
All right, we're a little over time. We'll stop. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.